Hello, this is Video Game is One Word. I'm Adam Condra, and it is March 4th, 2021, and people on Twitter are mad about Dr. Seuss. All right, today I wanted to talk about the Outriders demo, which has been out for a couple days. I haven't played much of it. I put probably an hour or two, 90 minutes, somewhere thereabouts, in there, just with one class so far, and I just wanted to talk about how it brought a certain amount of warmth playing it. I think objectively this is a pretty janky maybe not just not a great game overall, but it's playing at a couple of things that I think really kind of endear it to me, and they conjure up a certain aesthetic isn't the right word, but like a certain kind of je ne sais quoi that evokes like late aughts third person budget shooters in a way that I don't think is intentional. I mean, if it is intentional, it's low key a work of genius. But I started playing this game, and the prologue is just abysmal. It's one of the worst things I've seen in a AAA box title in a while. Just the most generic boilerplate kind of video game science fiction, where you think, how many other games? It's not even that it's all that similar in its story setup to other games. I think Mass Effect Andromeda comes to mind, but in general, it has the feel of a science fiction story with no real ideas behind it. And it feels like something I've played 1,000 times before, even if I can't exactly put my finger on what those things are. Like, it's just sometimes you play something and it's so dull and uninspired that you can't even list what its references are, because it just kind of wipes your brain out, if that makes any sense. And I sat there playing this, and it's Earth far in the future has been destroyed by climate change, and so they send spaceships packed to the gills with as many people as they can, cryogenically frozen, to hunt for a sustainable planet on which they can live. And then they arrive on said planet, and of course things aren't quite what they seem, and mayhem ensues. And that whole setup and kind of landing on the planet and having, I guess, what would be their kind of Pandora moment, where you're traveling over the terrain and kind of taking in all the ecology, it has zero impact, and you're talking with all of these characters who are just kind of like, eh, I'm your buddy, and they're it's it just you can feel the lack of calories as you're watching this thing and wondering just how much time of your life it's actually taking away to absorb it. And what it actually reminded me of was that it was that game that was all it had a tie-in show on the Sci-Fi Channel. I think Defiance. I think it's yeah, Defiance. Which was one of those things. It was like a cross-media experiment at the time, where they were like, the stuff you do in the game affects what happens on the show, and vice versa. And I think it was one of those ideas that had to be attempted before people realized that they didn't actually want it. Quantum Break was in a similar position. It's like, well, why don't we try and, make something like a story or a product that kind of blends two different media at once. And it's like, yes, you should try and do that, but also at the same time, like, this is going to end up in the same spot. It's like, it's just, this is not germane to what I'm here to talk about today. Anyway, Outriders reminded me a lot of Defiance. It had kind of that, kind of prehistoric planet setting, and these colonial marines types are there to kind of lay down the law and get things prepared for the weaklings who are frozen and are going to be inhabiting this planet. And then once that is all over, the game takes a left turn that I thought was actually quite bold and pretty amazing. And this is where I started to become endeared toward it, which is that you kind of go and do your thing, and you discover this ecological event that you don't really understand, some kind of new weather storm, risk, disaster event. It throws a wrench in all of your plans, and people, double cross you, and it ends up with bodies on the ground, and you end up cryogenically frozen yourself. And when you wake up, it's the same planet, but it's 30 years in the future, and absolutely nothing has gone right. You come out and you emerge in this world that was supposed to be, kind of your new Eden, your Cradle of Civilization remixed edition, and you come out and find that the ecological event led to this moment where there was, certain people got powers from it, and it affected people in different ways, and it killed a bunch of people, and then it kind of throws everyone who came to the planet in disarray, and it splits people into factions, and they've got this kind of this, I guess it's almost a quasi-religious angle with, people who've been affected. They call them the altered. Get it, alter. People are split up, and you've got kind of these competing factions of bandits, and you end up meeting up with a couple of the characters who were in the prologue with you, and they have become just these totally embittered, alcoholic, misanthropes, who were just fighting this war for the last 3 decades, and they're just completely hard-bitten by this point. And I actually really liked that, because everything else about Outriders, the story is really weak getting off the ground, and you look at the art style and just the general feel of the way the game plays, and it's just janky and just off enough, and the art is just weak enough for you to feel like, this game either needs a handful of better ideas and maybe a little bit better creative direction, or it needs like another, $40 million or whatever was in their budget for this. But I think with this story setup, all of that, slightly off center quality to things, I think that starts to work in the game's favor. This game is really ugly, and if you've seen any of the footage of like the weapons and kind of some the look of the legendary gear you can get and stuff, it looks like it's made. There's a gun that looks like it's made out of a rack of pork ribs, and teeth, and it's just this kind of organic firearm technology. It's space marines melded with, some kind of like gross gore flesh aesthetic. It's just really off-putting and nasty, and I think having that be the sort of visual engine that tells your story of people who are just trying to survive on this new planet that was supposed to be, a place of hope. Like they get here and it's like, okay, we gotta colonize and we gotta, establish cities and we gotta establish civilization and, start having babies and generating a new world for ourselves. And then to have all of that just immediately snatched away from them and have it descend into war and chaos, it really drives home this theme, which again, might not be entirely conscious, might be, just happy accident or whatever, that this is what actual survival for its own sake looks like. None of these characters who have been awake for the 30-year war that's been raging while your character was asleep, you look at them after you get out, and you look at, what their township is like, and what their clothing is like, and what their culture seems to be with the kind of the graffiti. This has some really good like dumb graffiti in it. There's a place you go into. It's this gang hideout for this faction called the Hounds, and the word woof is just graffitied onto every surface. It's hilarious. But playing Outriders and kind of seeing what they've made of this world in the intervening 30 years when they've been at war, and you realize these people really don't have anything to fight for. Like, you think about similar quasi-apocalyptic shooters and games, stuff like Fallout. They've all got a kind of kind of underlying redeeming quality to the look of the world. You think about Gears of War, and it's got that whole like pathos driven, destroyed beauty kind of thing. And then you've got Fallout, and it's got kind of the 1950s aesthetic and everything that it does, and Borderlands, has that kind of, just crazy cartoonish aspect to it. Outriders looks like Borderlands did before they made that switch in the art style. I think it was like 2007 or so. They had the Game Informer cover where they announced the game, what it is, and it's like, yeah, it's gonna be Diablo with guns, and it's a cool sounding idea. And but it had just this terrible generic kind of Dust Bowl apocalypse look that had no weight or impact at all. And that's very much the vibe that Outriders gives off, is that, it's just this kind of World War I griminess with weapons that have been cobbled together with literal flesh in some cases, and it just, none of it looks stylish or in tune with any other part of itself. But the benefit of that, I think, that you get from this is that it really sells just how isolated and nihilistic these characters are now that they, got thrown off their ship and were supposed to be kind of this, a security team for like a more scientifically driven community. And they've instead, been forced to turn into, guerrilla fighters and tacticians. And they have, it sells the idea that they are fighting for absolutely nothing, except their next breath. And it's like, this is a game about survival where the characters very clearly, manifestly have nothing to fight for except just, existing. And I think there's something, there's real, I think there's actual potential in that. New, I don't know about new narrative territory necessarily. I mean, a lot of games have tackled this before about what it means to survive in the midst of war and apocalypse and that kind of thing. But Outriders looks like it's working from a very raw angle, in which you can look at these characters and think, what is the point of any of this? Where is any of this going to go? If not the fact that these people are just going to be fighting against each other until they're dead, and eventually this entire, endeavor, the drive to kind of see through the survival of the human race from one planet that's been destroyed to another that has potential, and to realize, it's eventually, it's just going to burn itself out and snuff itself out because of these unfortunate circumstances with, the ecology of the new planet and the fight against that. And, I am not expecting any kind of deep commentary on that kind of thing, but I look at sort of how dull and uninspired the characters are, and then how the game immediately puts them through this crucible where they turn into like worse and more off-putting versions of themselves. But now they have, like, the fact that they pasted out 30 years, I think, gives them not necessarily gravitas, but it gives them a certain kind of credibility to be the kind of grungy, hard-bitten, perfunctory video game badasses that are a feature in so much of these shooters. And then I was playing it, and I think I unlocked the full like basic power set. I mean, just like the I had every button on the controller occupied, I guess I should say. I didn't hit the top of the skill tree for the demo, but playing through all of that and trying to get used to the rhythm of how the game works, and the fact that the sensory input when you're taking damage is just cranked up to 11, and it's just this really aggressive, like constant anxiety of, all these feedback sounds and images coming in while you're trying to get your bearings, and then you're realizing cover is just not an option at all. Generally you think, okay, I need to find some sort of tactical position on this map, and figure out how I'm going to work through these methodically. And this is very much the Doom 2016 ethos applied to a third person cover based shooter, which is like, no, if you stop moving at all, not only are you going to die, but you're going to be extremely confused as to what's happening because the amount of overload that is introduced into the HUD when you're taking damage, it's just, it's there's a censorious quality to it where you're like, I don't even know what I could do respond to this now. And then eventually you realize, okay, I know what powers I have that will kind of mitigate that sensory overload. In this case, I was playing as the, I think it's called the Destroyer or the Berserker or somebody. He's a character who covers himself in rocks and he can like take extra damage and stuff. And it's like, okay, that power, is there to kind of mitigate the aesthetic overload. And then I know this other power I have can close the gap on enemies really quickly. And you can build your feedback loops out of that, to be like, how am I going to manage the space in between me and my enemies? And what weapons am I using that are easy to accommodate that? And so that part of the game, I think, is super interesting because when you touch it for the first time, it just really feels slippery and janky and inexact. And it's got this kind of careening, imprecise feel to it that is the opposite of what you're generally looking for in a game like this. But on the other side of that, it had this kind of gimmicky quality to it where I felt like I was back in like 2008 or something, and suddenly I'm playing something like Stranglehold or Fracture or Inversion, or granted, Inversion was like 2012, but there was that era from like the beginning of the Xbox 360 until the basically that whole generation, the 360 generation. If it wasn't Gears of War and it wasn't Mass Effect, there was kind of a grungy quality to the, a jankiness to the third person shooters of that era. Where it was like, okay, we got one gimmick that we can use for this that kind of sets us apart. Hello and welcome to Video Game is One Word. I'm Adam Condra. It is March 10th, 2021, and today on Twitter, I think I didn't I was actually good today. I didn't look at much Twitter, so I'm not sure what people are mad about today, but I'm sure they're mad about something. I was trying to gather my thoughts on a couple things. I wanted to talk about Hitman, but I'm still kind of playing through that. I got the Platinum Trophy last week, and I've been nibbling at some of the Hitman 1 content. I think I didn't really understand a lot of the challenge rules that are associated with Hitman and how to efficiently kind of master those levels is something I got a lot better at in Hitman 3. So I've been going through some of the stuff in Hitman 1 and pumping those levels up too, because there's a ton of cool gear that's associated with all this. So I want to get that and really. I'm trying to furnish more reasons for myself to keep playing Hitman because I think it's just an absolutely incredible game. But anyway, today I wanted to talk about Loop Hero, which Loop Hero, I think I heard about it for the first time maybe 4 days ago, 3 days ago. It was one of those things where you get kind of like a flavor of the month, flavor of the week thing going. With Valheim, and then so I think a friend of mine mentioned it on Twitter. He was like, "Loop Hero is going to be next. Just watch." So, a few days late to the party, but whatever. I'm here now, and I heard them discuss it on the Bombcast, and I immediately thought to myself, just as they were kind of laying out how the system worked and everything, I was like, "I cannot be allowed to touch this game," because it's a babysitting roguelike. It's the kind of thing you can just keep in a browser window, on your computer, and then just kind of touch and check up on throughout the day. And that is absolutely my kryptonite. I'm thinking of stuff like Slay the Spire and Into the Breach and that kind of thing. I was like, I can't add another one of those to my hard drive, which of course was me all but admitting to myself, I'm going to buy this tomorrow morning and immediately start playing through it, which is what I did. Actually, I started playing it on my break, and then I ended up being so enthralled that I called one of my called an audible with one of my middle school classes, and I was like, "Hey, I just want to show you this because I think it's awesome." Which is, I need more stuff like that because the stuff that my students play, it runs the gamut from stuff I'm just not interested in that they love because they're children, and stuff that I can't really talk about with them because, It's not the stuff that I would let them play if I was their parent, but their parents let them play it anyway, even though it's kind of more appropriate for someone my age, you know. Like, as much as I would love to cut it up about Doom Eternal with, you know, a pair of 13-year-olds, I don't want to. There's just something kind of weird about, you know, merging those two worlds that I'm not really eager to do, you know. So when I do find a video game that I think we can talk about that, you know, is interesting for me that I also think they would enjoy, I really try to talk it up and in some cases show it to them so they can see what's cool about it. So I had a study hall period. We spent that looking over Loop Hero, which is one of the. I mean, I don't. This game has a very specific look that's harkening back to an era that, you know, was before my time, really. And I don't really care for it. And I don't think it's visually interesting or compelling. But the ideas and the things that you're doing in Loop Hero are so wonderful. And so it's like playing this game is like beef demi-glace or something. You know, it's just super. You take the abstract essence of an RPG and what you're doing in an RPG from a gameplay standpoint, and then you just compress and compress and compress it, and you just filter out all the unnecessary flourishes that come with an RPG. Like, oh, what's our combat system going to be? What's our inventory system going to be like? How do we, you know, manage all the things that you're supposed to have in kind of a medieval RPG? And this game really just dispenses with all of that, and it is nothing but just pure, unadulterated meta work. You know, you're just focused on the metadata of an RPG and the meta activity of an RPG, and it's so concentrated and pure and dense. I love it so much. Describing this game and how it works is kind of a challenge, especially because before I bought it, I watched a gameplay trailer and I was like, I can't make heads or tails of any of this. This doesn't look like it makes any sense what's going on here. Which was weird because when I listened to the description of it on the Bombcast and they were explaining how you influence your runs and how you you know, kind of manage your resources and can change things based on these little cards you get, I was like, oh, this sounds awesome and perfect. But actually seeing it for the first time without having gone through the tutorial and without having played it really, was just, you know, very Byzantine and mystifying. But anyway, what the way it works is you are this hero who wakes up and he is conscious of the fact that existence is a thing. You know, he believes in the world and he believes in the fact that there is such a thing as existence. And I know that sounds very vague and abstract, but what happens is the game opens with this like skeletal wizard appearing and just wiping out everything that exists. And then you awaken in this dark void, and it's your job to find things that exist again and kind of put them together to sort of remake the world, I guess. The way they visualize that stuff and how it actually pans out in the metagame and in, you know, the kind of community that you're building outside of your runs, you know, it's very dark, and then there's just these snatches of pixel art that are kind of put together, and you're having character portraits talk to one another and that kind of thing. And so it's very much you just kind of have to accept these ideas for what they are and sort of visualize it in your head, if that makes any sense. But you play this hero who's trying to re-exist existence, and you appear on this little track on the screen, and it's randomly generated, so the track is. It's a closed circuit every time, but the shape of it and kind of the pathway that it produces is different and unique for each run. And so you are just automatically traveling on this path, this loop. And it's a circuit that restarts at a campfire, which is somewhere on the loop. When you pass the campfire, it's kind of a Dark Souls effect. It upgrades the. Well, not really. It upgrades the level of the enemies, and it also buffs you in certain ways, restores a little bit of health, and depending on what bonuses you have activated, it might change a couple of other things. But the deeper you get into these loops, the more things are kind of modified as you progress, and that's how the difficulty scales as you're moving. So you automatically move through the map, and it's always the same circuit at the same speed, really. And there are enemies on the path, and when you get to those enemies, you automatically fight them based on, what your stats are and what your health is and that kind of thing. And they will drop terrain cards, and they will drop weapons, armor. I think there's an accessory piece and an armor piece and a shield and a weapon. And so you can start and stop when your character moves to kind of take care of that stuff, set the terrain that you want, and then keep moving through the circuit. And the terrain can be anything. I guess what you would consider to be passive tiles, which is like rocks and grass. And if you set them up, they are regenerating this amount of HP for you during the start of a new day, or they are adding to your HP pool. And if you're putting those cards together in certain patterns, it can create different new structures that have different bonuses for your character. So you have to think very carefully about where you can set that stuff on the map to make sure that you're using it efficiently and you're getting the bonuses that you want. And it's kind of informing your run and making it as efficient and well crafted as it could be. And so the terrain changing and the inventory management in concert with one another, that's where kind of the roguelike variation is had. And all the movement and all the fighting is just taken care of for you. And it's like, okay, are you just managing the outward characteristics of this character to make sure that they can perform properly by moving through the loop and defeating any enemies that are in your way? And when you're defeating enemies, you're also gathering resources that you can then use to take back to your kind of homestead area and build new facilities. I only played, I mean, Steam counter says I played for 4 hours, but functionally I only played for probably 45 minutes or so, just having it minimized and then popping it up and kind of making little moves and letting it go. So that stuff seems very slow going. I mean, this looks like something you could sink a significant amount of time into. But I just love that there is no cruft. I mean, there's almost no game here. It's just pure number management and item management, and there's not even a progress bar, but the loop itself is the progress bar. And so as you make decisions that change what enemies show up on the loop and in what density and how frequently and what type they are, so you're getting different types of weapons with different bonuses and armor and that kind of thing. It's just all metadata for you to manage. It's like this perfect sort of spreadsheet, this kind of like role-playing game accounting that you're doing to make sure that your character is, strong and brave and is gathering what they do to need to save the world. And that's so good as a concept. I feel like a lot of games have been adjacent to this kind of approach. I didn't play Minute, but I think it's, if you remember Minute, that was another Devolver game from a few years ago that I think had this kind of a similar thing. It's like you get a certain amount of time to progress. Excuse me, I got a bug in my throat. You have a certain amount of time to progress through this world, and it provides certain meta bonuses for you that send the over. I mean, that's the roguelike thing, is like you're taking extreme penalties and dealing with challenges in the short term to make incremental progress in the long term. And I feel like a lot of clicker games have done that as well, but there's never, I can't think of anything that's been quite like this where it's applied solely to the context of kind of a fantasy RPG, and it's done in a way that, your role is just to manage the automation to tell the story. And The thing about that is that the writing in the game is actually, I think, fantastic. It's one of the best parts about it. This idea that, you have to functionally what you're doing is trying to maximize efficiency and be creative about how you manage your resources in order to bring shape to the world again. And there's probably something a lot deeper to be said to that, and about how, you think about video games, and I can't remember who said this, but it was, someone was talking about the reason shooting and fighting is so popular in video games is because it's easier to delete art assets than it is to generate them. And then you've got, this game, the kind of whole philosophical conceit, even if it's not rendered on screen, if it's something you have to abstract in your mind, is about, literally the quest of the game is to do the opposite of that in this kind of very profound existential way. And I remember there's a thing I did earlier today where if you build out your mountain tiles and your rock tiles in a certain pattern, I did this by accident. I can't remember how exactly I did it, so I'll probably have to experiment or look it up later. It actually creates like this massive mountain peak. And if you get one of those massive mountain peaks on your map, it starts generating harpies who will appear and then fly down and rest at some point on the loop for you to run through and fight. And the cool thing about this game is that anytime you're introduced to a new enemy type, you have this kind of tete-a-tete with them where you see what their whole deal is as a creature that exists and kind of what they want for themselves out of the world. And so, you run into vampires, for example, and the vampires are like, we have always existed and existence is a curse. It's like we're just this is punishment for us to continue to have the world remade, and so we're going to try and stop you from doing that because we don't want to be here and we don't think we should exist. And the fact there's some great bits in there with like the hunger of what it means to have to subside on other living beings for a survival that you don't really think is worth it. There's some interesting stuff at work there. But anyway, this mountain peak generates a harpy, and when you meet the harpy for the first time, you have this conversation with her where she talks about the reason she's going to attack you and the reason she's trying to kill you is because all she wants is to ensure survival for her children. And she can't do that up on the mountain peak. So she comes down to the loop where you are trying to do the work to rebuild existence. And she says, I'm going to kill you so that my children can feast on your flesh. And that's the only ambition she has. And she can't, you try to reason with this creature, and she cannot conceive of the idea that there could be a broader world that has, ecosystems where she could cohabitate with humans. And so, the fact that that's all playing out on this tiny screen that looks like, it's got these little sprites that kind of look similar to Final Fantasy, or the tile design reminds me of those old Indiana Jones side scrollers in a way. Not like in staging and function, but just like the actual grit of them and the texture has that kind of pebbly pixel art look. I know there are better examples to use, but this is just the one that popped into my head. Just having those kind of conversations and those kind of grand thoughts and implications about, these other creatures who are sentient in their own way, but they're not stewards of what the earth is. And so they can only, kind of talk about it from this solipsistic perspective with you. I'm really eager to see what else the game has in store for that, because I'm sure it's the type of thing that, if you took, there's goblins at one point and they have their own deal. It's like if you examine each of these kind of fantasy ideas and then think about, okay, so what actually is humanity's role within this? And if it's to be stewards of, the existence of, existing things itself, that's a very potent, compelling idea to me. Especially coming from a Christian perspective, and thinking about, well, God put us on this earth specifically to be stewards of it. And, these days when you have those conversations and you talk about them, it's usually from an environmental standpoint and about, what constitutes being a good steward of the earth and making sure that you're not wasteful or destructive, and then coming at it from the other angle of Loop Hero, where it's like, okay, the world is destroyed, but you are, of course, still a steward of it, and how this kind of plays out. And it's not perfectly translatable. Obviously, this is not a game about, Christianity or Christian metaphysics or anything like that, but it's still a very intriguing concept for a story. And so far, I think the writing has really carried the weight, even more so than I would expect it to make it interesting on that level. So, excuse me. I gotta give up before my voice goes. So, yeah, Loop Hero, I'm gonna be playing a lot more of it in the coming days and weeks, probably. I'm sure my students will be as well, and I'm sure the rest of y'all will be as well too. But that's really all I had to say about it at the moment. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you again. Bye.